guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if I know how to speak today. Oh, and just at the top of this, I want to say, I couldn't remember the Janet Jackson album from last week.
Oh my God. Yes.
Rhythm Nation.
Rhythm Nation.
Yes.
Oh my Lord.
But why was I having
trouble?
How
do we forget Rhythm Nation?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't even know.
How are you,
my dear? I'm okay. I'm wondering about our internet, but it seems to be okay. Like, it's a constant, right? Like, nobody has good internet, right?
Well, also because we're in California, but Mercury's in retrograde. I know people don't believe in that, but it does affect stuff.
It's in retrograde. Like, I don't want to believe in it because then maybe there's hope, but like the reality is like it's in retrograde. Okay.
Yeah. And it affects, you know, electronics and communication and you have to check and recheck everything during this time. And it's going to last for 3 weeks. It lasts until like the 23rd. So a little bit over 3 weeks.
I can't do it anymore. I can't. Yeah.
So okay, hang in there. I think we should get started because I believe I have a, you know, normal-ish kind of length. And I believe you have a little bit long. So.
A little bit longer.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's get started.
Okay.
And so my notorious woman, I believe I am first this week.
Okay. I had no idea.
Because last week I did the incredible Beyoncé.
Listen, I cannot stop listening to her since recording. I mean, I was also obsessed with the new album before we
Country
recorded,
Carter.
But now I'm like it's a problem. It's a little
so
bit
good.
Of a problem. It's a
I
problem.
Love Levi's
I like
jeans because I'm a basic bitch, and I think people are like, "It's so basic." I was like, "That's what I love it. It's like so romantic. I love it."
Okay. You sent me this. Remember? Okay. Fizza. Remember our friend Fizza?
Uh-huh.
She posted a thing where like, if you want to stop a Gen X woman in her tracks for 4 minutes and like whatever seconds, play the song Hold On by Wilson Phillips. And I was like, Fizza, are you stalking me? Because she is. Because I am that white girl. Like I am that white Gen X. Like I have been numerous times been in a situation where someone looks at me in the eyes and presses play to that song. And I'm like, hold on for one more day. Like I have every feeling. And
shout out to Fizza.
I love you, girl. You
we
know
love
me too
you.
Well.
It's so fun. I watched that. I was like, oh, she woke up and chose violence. Okay.
Yeah, she did. And I commend her for it because
yes,
honestly, even though she was like knocking Gen X, like I just feel seen. That's how I took it. Thank you for getting
yes.
me.
Okay. We love Fizza. Check out that episode, guys.
So
let's get started. So my notorious woman this week is Stormy Daniels.
So
let's get into it. Okay.
Listen, because so many times I'm like, oh, I know about her. No, I don't. I don't know shit
I don't think
about
we
her.
Do. Yeah.
We
I didn't
don't.
Know. Yeah. So let's get into it. So
yes.
Stormy Daniels was born Stephanie A. Clifford on March 17th, 1979 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Okay.
To Sheila and Bill. Now, she says that basically Sheila and Bill, her dad was like, I don't want kids. Her mom was like, cool, cool, cool. And then her mother changed her mind and wanted a kid and got pregnant on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
So her dad was like, that's not cool. So he stuck around though, as long as he could, but he didn't want kids. And that's a deal breaker for a lot of people.
That's not a great idea. People don't generally change their mind. I think that's sort of a myth. You know, like I saw the baby and then I fell in love. No, you saw the baby and then the baby shit and wouldn't stop screaming. That's reality of small, tiny babies.
And they were a young couple too. So, and so when she was about four, they separated. So she was raised mainly by her mother. Now, according to her, she came from a pretty average low income household. And she says that she's like, basically, I was like white trash, quote unquote. Okay. But she also, you know, as such, someone who comes from a low income family, she lived in a pretty bad neighborhood. You could hear mm-hmm. gunshots around and like, you know, it just wasn't a great neighborhood. And then to make matters worse, when she was about 9, she was repeatedly awed and molested by a neighbor.
Oh,
because according to her, her mother was too young to have a baby. And even though she wanted to have this baby, she probably wanted to have a husband. But with no husband, she became very negligent, basically, and wanted to party. And really, there were times when Stephanie was left on her own. And I'm not blaming her mother for, you know, the neighbor doing that. But that's what predators look out for. They look out for children who are, you know, neglected and who have issues because they make easy prey.
I mean, it's very true. That I'm very loud with my kids at parks and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm very just like, no, I'm intrusive and I know everything they do.
So, yeah. I mean, you have to be. And to make matters worse, when she told people, she wasn't believed.
Oh my God.
So imagine being 9 and then like telling the big people, the adults, and then they don't believe you. So that will be a theme throughout her life, unfortunately.
This was he ever, I guess he was never caught. I guess he was never.
You know, it doesn't say. And also, it's just like in these small, low-income places, it just surprises me. A lot of people now, it's different. I feel like in today and age, people know how crazy it is. But I mean, in some communities, these molesters still, these child rapists are still like, people make excuses and like, you'd be surprised. But that was her experience, unfortunately.
If you just chop the penis off, the problem goes away.
And the hands, like, yeah.
Well,
so,
yeah, the hands and the penis. And then we're fine. You can live. I'll let you live.
Yeah. To do that to children. But so her father eventually remarried to her stepmom. And she, through her stepmom, it sounds like they got along, through her stepmom, she was introduced to the love of horses. And so she said that, you know, being around horses just made her inspired and it kind of gave her an escape from her, you know, humble existence at that time. And, you know, because horses are, especially in the South, are associated with rich people and because horses are very expensive to keep up. So she began hanging around a stable and offering to exercise people's horses, you know, so she can just be near them, get to ride them.
Yeah.
And she eventually began working at a riding stable when she was old enough to work and in high school. And then eventually she was gifted a horse, but you still have to pay for the upkeep, and which is very expensive. But she just loved them so, so much. And she even said she thought about being a veterinarian, but at that time she would have like shot anybody who hurt an animal. So she's like, maybe that wasn't a good, you know.
Yeah.
So she's in, by this time she's in high school. She's working at she's finding solace working at the stable. And, you know, she didn't have a lot of money. Her parents probably don't have a lot of money. And one day she saw like a classmate drive up in like a purple sports car. And she was like, oh, did you get that for a graduation gift or whatever? She's like, no, I bought this on my own. She's like, what? Turns out the girl was working at a strip club.
Okay.
So one day, a couple of weeks after seeing her with this car, she goes by the strip club and she's just like.
And she's how old?
She is 17 at this point.
Okay.
So she goes by the strip club and they, you know, just to check it out. And, you know, she's a pretty girl. She blossomed into a young, beautiful girl. And they were like, do you want to do a guest set? So she tried the guest set and she's like, oh my God, I was hooked, because she's like, I made more money in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Then it would take me, I think she said like a day, maybe a couple hours. Like, it was just a lot of money. Like, and she's 17, she's poor. Like,
right.
Like, what? Okay. So she decided to give it a try. So she started working at the strip club and she had to choose a name. So she chose Stormy Daniels to reflect her love of Motley Crue. And bassist of Motley Crue named Nikki Sixx, he named his daughter Storm.
Oh, that's cute. So,
yeah. Okay. And actually, Stormy Daniels is like a great name, actually.
It's a really great name. I approve. Yeah.
But she stayed in school. She eventually graduated from high school in Baton Rouge. And she, at that time, she was considering maybe going to college to become a journalist. And she actually got a scholarship. But she, by that time, so probably about a year later, she was making so much money. And she really loved the independence of having her own money. And she had enough money to take care of her horse and like buy the things that, you know, a young girl wants. She was just like, I'm going to see how this is going to work out. So she became very popular. So she eventually became a headliner at the clubs, which is where you make the big, big bucks.
Right.
And she was making so much money at a certain point in. So she graduated in 97. In 99, she got boobs. She paid for some boobs, some bigger boobs.
Yeah, those are not cheap. Those are not cheap.
They're not cheap. And she said they came out a little bit bigger than what she wanted, but it like after that, she made even more money.
I mean, honestly, this sounds nice. I'm not mad at shit tons of money within 30 seconds. You know what I'm saying? Like,
And it's also, people have to understand, like, you know, socioeconomically, like if you grow up and you're a pretty girl, you have to use what you have.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting though that she actually got a scholarship to go to college. So she could have done that if she wanted to, but you know, she's also like growing up probably not having enough at all and then being able to help her family maybe. And like, so, you know,
it's hard to get in that mindset when you don't have that support.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it's hard.
Yeah.
So,
but she was very successful very quickly. Now, side note, she appeared in an episode of Real Sex. You remember Real Sex?
I mean, vaguely.
Yeah. So Real Sex was a show on HBO. And no, it's kind of like what we would call a docuseries nowadays, where they explore different kinds of sex, different like fetish communities. And like,
I didn't know that. I thought it was like, remember like the After Hours on like
Skinamax, Cinemax?
Yes, that's what I thought it was.
No, it's not... it's a docuseries. It just follows, like they would go to like a swingers retreat or like the thing where the people dress up like horses or like the, you know, furry
this
thing.
Fascinating.
Real Sex
I'm
was the bomb.
Okay.
Where she appears in an episode in on Real Sex where she is participating in the 2001 Miss Nude Great Plains contest.
Okay.
So, yeah. So she's already in that sort of industry. Now, because she's really, really successful, she's a headliner at these strip clubs. She said that she was visiting a friend. I think it was out here in California. She was visiting a friend who was like into porn. So she went to set one day, and because of the way she looks, they thought she was a performer. And she's like, no, I'm not. And they were like, you sure? Like, you want to, you know... And she's like, okay, well, they did a screen test and porn is not for everybody. Just because you're a stripper doesn't mean you're going to get into porn.
No, but yeah, it's different.
She enjoyed it. She's a sexually liberated young woman and she got into that. And she was very, very successful at that. And she actually won Best New Starlet Award in 2004 from the Adult Video News. So, which is a big, big deal. That's like their award show. She was surprised that she won because she actually made a bet that another actress would win. So,
okay.
Now she's in the adult film industry now. And obviously if you're an actor, you want to do all the things. So she also wanted to do more mainstream, AKA non-adult film, adult films. So she appeared in Pornucopia, which is kind of like a good bridgeway, also in 2004.
Okay.
After that, she started going out for more while maintaining her presence in the adult film industry. Because I feel like in the 90s, there was like a porn star who sort of went mainstream and people were like, is it Tracy Lords? Is that her name?
I have no, I know there's a January, am I making that up? Isn't there Yes.
Was January Jones is from Mad Men.
Right. Wasn't she, am I making this up?
No, she wasn't in porn.
Okay,
before.
I think someone told me that she was.
No, there was a, I think it's Tracy Lords, if our listeners okay. know, but I believe that she was one of the first ones that was able to cross over, having been very famous in adult films.
I think that's fantastic. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I think it kind of opened it up. I think it kind of opened it up for adult films. So she actually was in The 40-Year-Old Virgin in 2005.
Was she really? I love that movie.
Yeah, she's like in when Steve Carell is watching the Space Nuts video.
Yes.
He dreams about her.
Oh my God, that's her. Okay. So she's in Why do I remember that? I do, though.
So she's doing really, really good. So she, you know, and also she had signed a contract with a production company, a porn production company, adult film production company called Wicked. So basically she became their main girl, but she always had aspirations about going behind the camera. So she also wanted to direct. So she started directing. And her ultimate goal was to direct a horror film.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she already had aspirations. And one of the owners of Wicked, which is a woman, because it was one of those production companies that really wanted the women to be, it was women centered. So the porn was women centered. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. We need more of that.
So the owner was saying that, Stormy had aspirations. She was very ambitious. She started directing as well. So by 2006, you know, she's well established within the industry. She seems to like what she's doing, but she has aspirations beyond that. She has a goal. She has a plan. But also in 2006, when she was 27 years old, she met Donald Trump at a golf tournament in Lake Tahoe.
Ew. Yeah.
Wicked had sponsored a hole, different companies would sponsor a hole. And
there's a lot of jokes there that I'm not saying. Okay.
Because we're not 12-year-old boys.
But aren't we? Okay, go on. A grown-up Miriam says go on.
Well, I also think this is, again, where porn was becoming a little bit more mainstream because you would have a something like Wicked that could be successful where it's women focused. It's not as undercover. And so, again, this is the heyday of what's my girl, Pamela Anderson, who looked like a porn star.
But was not.
She was not. I loved her show VIP. I love that show. It's so silly and stupid. You guys should check it out. It's just silly and fun and entertaining. It's a really great show. Okay. So I feel like Stormy is coming up in a time and she's a star in the industry, bona fide star. And she is a successful woman. She's making a lot of money. She's happy doing her thing. So she, she's just doing her thing. So when she met Donald Trump, she met him with a lot of other people. Oh, and just a side note, she had said that she knew at that time that her main demographic were middle-aged white guys who were probably conservative.
Yeah.
So she's like, I knew that my number one fans were 45 to 65 white, conservative, and rich, probably. So, which is interesting because of the background that she comes from, which I think it's interesting that she's aware of that. So he's totally in her demographic because he's 60 at the time.
Mm.
And so, she knows how to flirt. So she's flirting with everyone. And his security guard asked her to go out to dinner. She said, absolutely no. Nope.
Good. Yeah.
But her publicist at the time was like, it might not be a bad idea because at this time he had The Apprentice show.
Yeah.
And so her publicist was like, it may not be a bad idea. So why don't you accept it?
I'm one of those people that's like, I knew he was trash way back when. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. A lot of people did. So, now in an interview with 60 Minutes Australia, she said that, he invited her to dinner and she got there a little bit earlier. So she called up and he was like, I'm not ready yet. Why don't you come on up? We'll have a drink and then go down together. So she goes up there and he has on his pajamas.
He's so disgusting.
But she said she actually teased him because she knows how to handle these guys for the most part, and she made a Hugh Hefner joke or whatever. And she said for the first 20 minutes, he was really into his character, apprentice character, da 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 da. So she was like, am I going to have to spank you? And he was like, maybe. So she actually spanked him with a little, you know, like a little playful tap on the thing. And he went, all right. And then he sort of like stopped the facade, and they actually had a conversation. And she said they actually sat in the, you know, because he was in a suite in the living room, and they were talking about business because he wanted to know the business side of what she did, of the adult entertainment industry. And she wanted to know about what he did. And she said that went on for about 3 hours. They actually talked, and he was like, oh, you're really smart, actually.
Yeah, she's very smart.
And he said she reminded him of Ivanka. And so she thought, oh, and she said at that time there was no like weirdness. They weren't really flirting. It was like they were really like having a conversation. So she felt like that he was respectful in that moment. He was respecting her because he was so surprised that she was so smart and she knew so much about the business side. And, you know, again, it's a good, she thought it was good networking.
Okay.
You know, and then when he said the thing about Ivanka, she thought that that was, you know, because of his age, that was a compliment that, you know, Ivanka's blonde, but also a businesswoman. And oftentimes people think blondes are stupid, you know, the whole stereotype about stupid blondes or whatever. So she felt like everything was like fine. Like she didn't really think anything of it. So she had to go to the bathroom. So she went into the bathroom, and it's a suite. So it's through the bedroom and in the bathroom. So she went in there and she didn't think anything of it. She came out though, and he was standing there with most of his clothes off.
He's so like, what's the opposite of porn? This is like the grossest story. Ew.
Yeah. And she said she was just so shocked that because she was like, she hadn't gotten that vibe at all in the 3 hours.
Right.
She's just like, oh, like, I guess we're doing this. Okay. And she's like, in the moment, you know, again, this is 2006. Like, she was just so shocked and surprised that after the conversation that they had, and she makes it clear he did not force her at all.
Okay.
But it was one of those things where I come out of the bathroom and you're between me and the door and you don't have on your clothes. Like,
it's still very much.
It's harassment. Problematic by today's standards even though he doesn't say, oh, if you don't do this and da da da, it's just sort of like, oh, you know, like, you know, do you want some opportunities? Da da da, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. Harassment. It's traditional.
You can sue this. It wouldn't be rape. It would be harassment.
Right.
Sue this is not the correct term, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it's like at the time, though, she was just like so shocked that we've all been shocked where you're like, is this really happening? Yeah. So she just sort of did. She's like, basically it lasts about 90 seconds. That's what she said. And then she was just like, I just want this to be over. So it was over. And then she said afterwards, he didn't offer her money and she didn't ask because honestly, if he had offered her money, she would have been really, really insulted.
Yeah.
That he considered her, despite her being a porn star, people think porn stars are sex workers and they're not.
They're not.
It's in the industry, but that's a different. Yeah. That's a different arrangement and agreement, right? That is not what she came up there for. So she just sort of like left and then didn't even think anything of it. Afterwards, though, Trump continued to contact her and he actually told her that he was considering putting her on Celebrity Apprentice.
Okay.
And she was like, that's never going to happen. They're never going to let you do a porn star. And he was like, no, every season I can shake things up and I have override ability.
Okay.
Like I can pick a person and they can't like reject the person.
Okay.
And so he thought she would be really good because she's beautiful and she's smart and da da da. And that went on for about 6 months and he would call her like every day, several times, like they would talk every day. She would have him on speaker or what have you. And, you know, but about 6 months later, he called her up and was like, oh, you're going to hate me. I got bad news. I can't put you on. And she was like, I told you, like, you know, so she was like, after that, I didn't think anything was any reason to continue the relationship. So it basically fizzled out. But she didn't really, it wasn't like a relationship, right? It was just one of those things, like a influential rich guy that I know that could possibly, because that would have been great for her to be on Celebrity Apprentice, actually.
Oh, totally. She probably would have loved it. but
yeah, yeah. So, excuse me. After that, she didn't even, you know, she just went on about her business. The following year, she appeared in Dirt, an FX network show, which I loved. And I loved that show when it was on. And then she also appeared in Maroon 5's video for Wake Up Call.
Okay.
And she was also in Knocked Up.
She was? Morgan.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Playing.
He's actually in the documentary that I'm going to talk about a little bit later about her life. Seth Rogen actually makes an appearance. So, cool. Yeah, there's actually a lot of high profile people. So, so she's just busy, you know, acting in adult films, mainstream films, directing. But she, this is so strange. So in 2009, 2010, she actually tried her hand at politics.
What? I didn't know this. Really? Yep. Okay.
A group of her fans attempted to recruit her to run against Republican Senator David Vitter in Louisiana in 2010. Now, she herself is a lifelong Republican. She would tell you that.
Okay.
Which is so interesting because she comes from like a poor background. But, you know. So she actually went on several listening tours around Louisiana to focus on the economy, as well as women in business and child protection issues. And she said, of course, if she's elected, she would retire from the adult industry, you know. But eventually she decided not to run because she felt like the media was not taking her candidacy seriously and the cost. So she wasn't getting backers and, you know, interest early on. So she just went back to doing her day to day stuff. Now, in 2011, her encounter with Trump back in 2006 resurfaced briefly when she was actually contacted by In Touch magazine.
Okay.
So she thinks that someone really, really close to her must have told her story to In Touch, because when they contacted her, she was like, I'm not really interested in telling this story. It's like, whatever. But she's like, they had about 90% of the details. So she's like, she never found out who did it. But and they had said to her, she's like, I'm not interested. But they're like, well, the story's going to come out anyway. So don't you want to like tell your side of it? So they were like, is this really true? And they actually had her do a lie detector test.
Motherfuckers, this world is stupid. Jesus
Christ. But she's
Christ.
Like, why would I lie about that? Like, okay. So they never paid her because they actually never ran the story. And then she said around that time, some strange man approached her in a parking lot with her infant daughter at the time.
Okay.
And basically threatened her to like stop talking about what happened between her and Trump.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was like, what? Because she was so confused because she's like, hey, that was so long ago at this point. And she's like, I thought of him as like a little silly man. Like, he's like, he would do like guest appearances on the WWE. Like,
he's gross.
Like PR stunts. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now we know, we now know that Michael Cohen, his personal lawyer, actually killed the story and probably sent the guy to threaten her.
Yeah, that's Michael Cohen. That sounds like
him. I mean,
like
we don't know allegedly.
Allegedly.
We do not know, but we do know it's reported in my research, actually in the documentary Stormy, that Michael Cohen actually, he killed the story because he threatened to sue In Touch.
Okay. All right.
So and again, this is 2011. So because around that time, Donald Trump was first like, oh, I might run for president. Like just kind of. But again, he's this PR guy. Like nobody's really taking this serious.
Yeah,
but now we know that he may have been taking it serious, which is why Michael Cohen was going out to like kill the story.
Yeah.
So again, she went back to doing what she was doing, focusing on continuing to be in movies, but directing these movies. Eventually, she would be inducted into the AVN Hall of Fame in 2014. And another porn standard like Hall of Fame, XRCO, in that same year. So later that same year. So she now her directing work in the adult industry gave her she garnered 14 AVN award nominations.
Oh,
yep.
I mean, so, that's amazing.
Yeah. So now, 2 years later, 2016, she says she was basically living the best life in Texas in her dream home.
Okay.
So, you know, she's making money. She's doing her thing. And then Trump announces that he's running for president. And because he's doing that, there's a lot of, you know, obviously more deep dive into his background and things like that. So among the allegations of sexual misconduct that were swirling around him, not to mention the release of the Access Hollywood audio, where he can be heard saying, quote, "When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy at all," end quote. So
speaking of penises all, but, that I would like removed anyways.
Yeah. So the heat is on him. And unfortunately, Stormy Daniels was about to be brought into the line of fire as well. Yeah. So according to her, in October of 2016, shortly before the presidential election in November, Michael Cohen, Trump's personal lawyer, reached out to her and paid her $130,000.
Yes, he did.
To deny that she had an affair with him in 2006. Now, according to her, according to this interview in 60 Minutes Australia, she said it was the best day of my life because she was actually embarrassed by the encounter. Like, she never wanted anyone. But just like with the people made her take a lie detector test, excuse me.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't believe her, which again goes back to her childhood trauma of telling what happened to her and people not believing her.
Yeah,
right?
That's fucked up. Yeah.
So she was like, this is great because A, I don't want the story to come out because basically it was just so the story wouldn't come out. And B, if it does, there's a paper trail, there's all this stuff so people will know that I was telling the truth. So win-win, right?
Yeah.
So she's like, okay. This is great. $130,000. Okay, fine. This is great. So in January of 2018, so that happened. So that was before the election. And then the election happened and he was in office. So once he was in office, this now also around this time, they had told her she cannot mention what happened.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
That's part. She had to sign an NDA.
Okay.
Because he's now in office, and so the story that In Touch killed back in 2006, if they published it now, it would be gangbusters.
Right.
So now people are actually doing, you know, there's this thing that this she's getting a lot of publicity because there's rumors of it, but also when the story breaks in January 2018, from the Wall Street Journal. So they paid her off in 2016.
Yep.
He gets into office. So about a year and a half later, the Wall Street Journal publishes the fact that she was paid hush money. Okay.
Yes.
And because of that, now she's kept her end of the deal since 2016. She hasn't said anything,
she
right?
She didn't say it. Yeah.
So because of that Wall Street Journal report, now everybody is chomping at the bit to get more information. And then In Touch Weekly is like, oh, we're going to publish this now.
Actually,
right?
We've already started our research.
So again, she's not saying anything. But then she heard that Michael Cohen, the lawyer, was shopping a book where
that
he promised to tell about the event because he wants to capitalize off of the press from the Wall Street Journal.
Oh my
and
God.
Da, da, da. So she got pissed because she's like, oh, so they're breaking their side of it. Because the whole the agreement she thought was that neither side could speak about what happened.
Let's be real. Nobody wants to brag about that.
Nope.
Nobody's happy about doing that with that awful piece of shit. There, I said it.
Yeah.
All right.
So she lawyered up with a guy by the name of Michael Avenatti.
Okay.
And they filed a lawsuit against Trump and saying that actually the NDA, that he never signed it.
Oh, shit.
So it was unenforceable.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what happened, world. Let me tell you.
And then the suit also further alleges that Trump's attorney, Michael Cohen, had been trying to intimidate her and scare her into not talking.
Yeah.
So now a day later, Cohen, still Trump's lawyer at the time in 2018, initiated an arbitration process in which an order that barred her from disclosing confidential information related to the non-disclosure agreement.
Okay.
Again, he's trying to enforce it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But again, they're like, well, your side broke the agreement. So she lawyered up, and to bolster her legal fees and to pay for it, she started a GoFundMe. And she began telling her side of the story, and she actually went on 60 Minutes and was interviewed by Anderson Cooper.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she said after that, after like 2018, after all of this, the threats to her life ratcheted up tremendously.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But this is a girl that grew up in porn. So she's pretty tough as nails. So she just continued to take it in stride. She actually, so she would always be touring and doing and headlining. And some really smart people came together. She's like, I didn't come up with this. I just joined the, they just actually renamed the tour, the strip club tour, to Make America Horny Again. Which is hilarious.
Yes.
Yes. She became like, you know, a darling of the left and also of the queer community, which culminated in her being in West Hollywood naming Stormy Daniels Day being May 23rd, 2018.
Did this Republican woman ever think this would happen to her?
No.
You know?
No. She basically she's trying to enterprise upon this and like, you know, and she rounded out the year by releasing a tell-all book called Full Disclosure that basically skewered the appearance of and lack of sexual prowess of Donald Trump in the bedroom. It's a juicy, you know, read. So people loved it. Jimmy Kimmel, he had her on a couple of times, you know, people read from it and like people were just getting a kick out of it, like to blow off some steam. But she does say that she was actually kind of conflicted about the book in many ways, that she like now and, you know, 2024, 2023, she's like, maybe I could have handled it differently, but so much was just going on. Cause you just can't believe this, like this dude that I had this brief encounter with like years ago, like what? Like, and the fact that he's president, it's just so weird. And now, in addition to all of this, so she's getting calls, right? Because she's like the tour is selling out, it's packed house, all this stuff. Celebrity Big Brother 22 in the UK reported that she might become a housemate because she's also popular across the pond.
Okay.
But later on a spinoff show, Big Brother's Bit on the Side, host Rylan Clark explained that just about 5 hours before the first live show, she said that she only wanted to appear on launch night and then leave. So she didn't want to like move into the Big Brother house.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know, a lot of going, she probably had a lot of offers. So, you know, now in March of 2018, she, again, in that interview with, Anderson Cooper, she said that they just had sex once and that, and she talked about being threatened in 2011 by some guy in a parking lot, which is so weird.
Yeah.
So all of this is just very, very weird. So on April 9th, 2018, FBI agents raided Michael Cohen's office. And seize emails because what's happening with the whole Stormy Daniels thing? It's like Watergate. It's not the crime.
Yes, it's the cover up.
They're trying to cover up.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the act. It's trying to cover up. Right. So that is what. And, you know, if he were a private citizen, this might not be a thing.
It wouldn't be a thing.
But now he's in public office.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like the president engaging in hush, you know, and conspiracy to lie. Right.
So yeah, with Clinton, it turns out that no one really cares about the trash human that he is. Like,
yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Monica Lewinsky Clinton thing, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that he's having, you know, that's improper to be having sexual relations with an intern, but it's the lying about it under oath and all. That's the thing that got him. So now in April of 2018, she filed a lawsuit against Trump for libel. Because he said that she was lying, basically.
Of course he said that.
And that she invented the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so she filed a lawsuit against him. In October of that year, the suit was dismissed under First Amendment grounds.
Yeah.
So she lost her appeal in 2020, and was actually, which is so terrible, was ordered to pay for his legal fees.
I hate him so much.
Which was like $293,000. And then she was actually ordered to pay an additional $200. So basically,
what?
Over $500,000.
That's insane.
Insane, right?
What the fuck? Insane. Well, when you stack the judges, that'll happen.
Yeah. And then in 2023, last year, she lost her appeal to reduce the amount for his legal fees and was ordered to further pay $120,000.
Okay.
So collectively, she was ordered to pay over $600,000 to his law firm for the defamation suit. Now, back to 2018, Cohen entered into a plea deal with prosecutors and saying that he paid her off at the direction of the candidate for the purpose of influencing an election. See, that's the thing.
Can't do that.
It's about the influence of the election.
Yeah.
In September 2018, he actually offered to invalidate the non-disclosure agreement if she would refund the $130,000.
Oh, shit. Because they need money.
It's just, yeah.
So gross.
Well, I mean, just like $600,000 for something she basically has to pay for something that actually happened to her. It's just crazy.
I don't even know. It's when our lawyers fuck it up. I don't know how to say it. Injustice.
Yeah.
Biggest form of injustice. Ugh.
Yeah. And unfortunately, in 2018, so, you know, she had really benefited from a bump, right? A bump in popularity and shows, and like she got the book deal and everything. But the tide started to turn in the latter part of 2018 because she started experiencing like real world consequences with people on the ground. So she was on her tour. And she was arrested by authorities who accused her of fondling patrons at a club in Ohio. With her lawyer, it was kind of proved that they had jumped the gun, and it was kind of like entrapment in a way. I don't know if that's the correct terminology. But basically a day after the arrest, a Columbus police chief declared that a mistake was made during the arrest. And so she filed suit against them in federal court to the city of Columbus, alleging that the police officer was politically motivated when they arrested her. And she and her lawyer were seeking $2 million in damages.
Get it.
In September later that year, they agreed to settle the federal lawsuit and she received $450,000 in compensation.
Okay.
Now, she's going to need it to cover those costs, right?
She needs 150 more and she's good.
And then also, but then her business started to wane. Like the tours weren't attracting people anymore. She was getting threatened. And then comes to find out that her lawyer, who had only agreed to take $100 from her in the beginning, because he knew it was like and he was on a lot of like talk shows and
he thought he was like a new star
and stuff.
Yeah.
But he and embezzled about $300,000 from her. And he actually ultimately went to prison for over 10 years as a result of stealing money from her and defrauding his other clients.
Jesus, I'm glad he's in jail at least.
So in the documentary, it basically, you know, she had written the book. So she was supposed to get 4 payments. So on the 3rd payment, she was still waiting for it for months because she's needing the money now because money is drying up. And she finally called. She finally found out that they had already sent the 3rd installment.
He took it,
and he kept telling her, "Oh, they haven't sent it, or it should be in the mail." That's what they said, and da da da. And so she was like, "That 4th payment they're sending, do not send it to him," because she's like, "He would have given me the 4th payment, saying it's the 3rd payment."
Yep.
And then yeah. So, yeah, it just, it was not good. So, and she was just like, you know, she's like, because people think you're making millions when you're on TV all the time. But she's like, no, you know, obviously she had become accustomed to a certain lifestyle, but she was not making millions.
Right.
And now she's being forced to go to court and then money's not coming in. So, and she was the sole breadwinner for her family at the time, her daughter and her husband. So, and this took a toll on her third marriage as well. This whole kind of thing. And so you guys can check it out in the documentary. But now, the past few years, so 2019 was really rough for her. And she's just, you know, battling, you know, legal fronts on the, you know, the back front, the end, every side she's turning. Things are just getting harder and harder and harder, just on a personal level.
Yeah.
And she just, she was getting beaten down, and she was just really, like getting, I don't know. She said she was just getting like really depressed in a lot of ways.
Okay.
The tide didn't turn back for her until 2020 with the assault on the Capitol.
Oh, how did that?
Where yeah. people started being like, oh, this is a bad dude, and wanting to know what she said more and more and more and more.
Oh,
right. So
yeah.
like, cause people had just been like, well, I guess he's president, so we have to respect that. Right. But then after 2020 happened and they tried to, assault the Capitol, she basically, the social pendulums swung back to her.
Okay.
You know, so she's just been making her way since then, you know, just rebuilding her, find another way to make a living. Cause I don't believe, I believe she retired from movies,
sure.
starring in movies. And after a certain point, you just, you get tired, you want to move on. But she said, actually now, like 20, like since the Capitol thing, but like 2022 and 2023, the threats that she's getting now are even more like intense than they were back in 2018.
Really?
Like in 2018.
Why?
Now she's like, it's death threats daily, and they're not even using like burner accounts or like, they're like saying their name. They're texting her. Yeah, well, threatening her family, I mean, and her daughter. She's been chased in cars and fired at.
Are you serious?
What the fuck? But she said in an interview with Good Morning Britain, she was like, oh, I'm packing heat, motherfucker, so bring it, okay? So now, one last thing to wrap it up this year in 2024, a documentary called Stormy has been released, and it focuses on her life. I got a lot of my information from that, as well as from, you know, the interviews on 60 Minutes and Good Morning Britain. And so, but this documentary, I watched it and it is fabulous. I think you guys should check it out. It focuses on her life. It's directed by Sarah Gibson, and it's now streaming on Peacock. So
okay.
check out Stormy. It's just her first name, Stormy.
I will check that out.
And at the taping of this episode, so obviously the film was finished before then, and it kind of, it was just, it kind of ended on like just how much money she owes this man who came into her life and ruined it. But at the taping of this episode, they're actually preparing to start the trial. Actually, the trial has started in the hush money allegations trial.
Oh,
and
really?
It actually began last week in New York City.
I didn't know this. We should talk about this more.
And as just a few days ago, the judge in the trial ruled that she and Michael Cohen, who's turned state's evidence in a lot of other cases against Donald Trump, they're able to testify. So about 2 weeks ago, she was on The View, the popular talk show, before this order came down from the judge. But she said, if she's asked to testify, she said, quote, I relish the day I get to face him and speak my truth, end quote.
Yes. Like, I'm so torn because I don't want the orange demon to have media support. You know what I mean? Because he just makes for good television, and that's how he became president.
Right.
And I don't want that. I don't support that. But I, when it comes to the women he has fucked over, I would like him to be raked over the coals. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
She says a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is Stormy Daniels.
Wow. Thank you so much for her. That's a whole new world. I did not know.
No. So who's your notorious woman this week?
My notorious woman this week, different world, but I don't know how different. Do you ever heard of a woman, a little known woman named Margaret Sanger?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Margaret Sanger. Okay. So I might have a little different point of view than I've had in the past based on my research today.
Okay.
Now, we'll start from the beginning. She was born Margaret Louise Higgins. I'm not really sure. Like, Yeah, she got, that makes sense. Okay. In 1879 in Corning, New York. Okay. Her parents were Irish Catholic, but they were like free thinking. Okay. Her mother, named Anne Purcell, conceived 18 times. She gave birth to 11 live babies and she died at the age of 49.
Damn.
Yeah. Now Margaret was 6th of 11. She attended Claverack College and Hudson River Institute. She had two sisters who supported like her education, like the idea of a woman being educated. In 1900, she enrolled at White Plains Hospital as a nurse probationer. In 1902, she married architect William Sanger, and that's her last name. And she left school for that. Now, I see it once in Wikipedia that she suffered from a form of tuberculosis, which kind of sometimes was bad, sometimes was okay, but she was fine with it. I don't really know how these old-timey diseases work, but okay. She did have three children.
Okay.
They settled down in Westchester, New York, but then a fire in 1911 destroyed their home. They lived in Hastings on Hudson, which is the town I got married in. Okay.
Oh.
It's a really cute town. Mm-hmm. And they moved to New York City. So in New York City, she worked as a visiting nurse in the slums of the East Side. And around now is when her and her husband both became active in local socialist politics. That's my girl. Okay. I'm not like, don't come at me. I'm not like a socialist, but I'm kind of a socialist.
Yeah. You know, and things meant different yeah. back then too. So
like you like your paved roads and public schools, then you're kind of a socialist too. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm probably preaching to the choir if you've gotten this far in our episode, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So she joined the Women's Committee of the New York Socialist Party, took part in the labor actions of the industrial workers of the world, and became involved with local intellectuals, left-wing artists, socialists, and social activists. So she started to write two series of columns on sex education in 1911, which was not a thing people talked about.
No.
Right? She wrote, it was titled, What Every Mother Should Know. And then she wrote another one, What Every Girl Should Know for the Children. Can you imagine?
Oh.
Right. So, like, I'm liking her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Her articles were, they were basically shocking, except a lot of people liked them and appreciated them. So it was, you know, it was a, oh, the vapors, but also it was like, yeah, about damn time. Didn't mean to get pregnant 7 times in a row. Now I know how it happened. So she worked with a lot of working class immigrant women, and she saw firsthand what it was to have children over and over and over again. She also, throwing it out there, saw her mother go through that.
Yeah.
And she saw a lot of self-induced abortions for lack of information because they didn't know how to avoid an unwanted pregnancy. There was a Comstock law created in 1873, which prohibited contraceptive information on grounds of obscenity.
Ugh.
Yeah. So I'm inspired because we keep rolling back laws to the 1800s these days.
Yeah.
And I want a fair warning. Okay.
That's the goal. Believe it or not, that's the goal.
That is the goal.
It really has
been slightly achieved in Arizona. Okay. So she was like, okay, let me help these women. But she went to public libraries and could not find information of how to help these women. So this was her new mission. Now, there's a lot I'm going to talk about in terms of like, she's slightly problematic now in our history, in our lore. She did oppose abortion because she felt that if you can stop the pregnancy in the first place, then you don't need an abortion, which we all know is very
unrealistic.
I mean, it's unrealistic and it doesn't follow the truth of our society, the truth of childbirth, the truth of pregnancy, right? Yeah. I will extend a little bit of maybe she is ignorant. She definitely grew up.
Well, she's a woman of her time.
She's a woman of her time. Yeah. I think she's wrong. I wonder if she would still think these things. Now, this was a time, again, women couldn't control anything.
Yeah.
They just would get pregnant. So she launched a campaign to challenge governmental censorship of contraceptive information through confrontational actions. Okay, so in 1914, P.S., side note, she became estranged from her husband in 1913. They divorced in 1921. She then had an affair between 1921 and then like until his death in 1946. She had a love affair with H.G. Wells.
Oh.
But in 1922, she also married her second husband, James Noah H. Slee. So,
okay.
Right? So she's just like, so it's the same. That's why I'm a little bit like, she was a woman of her time. She didn't know, but she's also like getting
Marking
married
out
and divorced.
In these streets. I mean, you know, she out here like, okay.
You know. So she launched in 1914, The Woman Rebel, which was an 8-page monthly newsletter, which promoted contraception, right? And they used the slogan, no gods, no masters. I don't really understand that slogan. Like,
yeah, I don't, maybe it's just something of its time.
Yeah. If anyone knows, I'm sharing it because I'm curious and I'm throwing it out there. Please DM us.
Yeah.
So she collaborated with anarchist friends. That was the world she lived in. And they popularized the term birth control because originally it was called family limitation. Did you know this?
No, I did not know that.
Right. Because I get it. Because family limitation means that, of course, you're married under the eyes of the Lord, right?
Yes.
And you're just doing the thing you have no choice to do, right? So she published it with one goal, and that was to challenge the federal anti-obscenity laws. So she was actively breaking the law so that she could take it to court. They suppressed 5 of the 7 issues, which, hey, she got 2 issues out. And then she created something called family limitation, which was another challenge to anti-birth control laws. So this 16-page pamphlet had detailed info and had graphic descriptions of ways women could use contraceptions. So, she was indicted for violating postal obscenity laws. Now,
can you imagine, though, the women out there were probably like, oh, my God, I need this information.
So desperately.
I do not want another baby.
No, I've had 8, right? Yeah. Like, I don't need 9. So I think this is interesting. She decided not to stand trial and she fled the country. So she did this to incite anger and then just like went to England. And she met British Neo-Malthusian, Charles Very Drysdale. So Malthusians was like a theory of population control. Again, she's not 100%, you know, I feel like time and place. And she also needed justification in a world that was shitty. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of fair. You know, like the idea of walking into a room in 1914 and saying women should have complete control of their bodies and their choices in life. Like most people in like the Western world, at least, would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? So she was into the Malthusian situation. She was the first woman to chair a session at the Neo-Malthusian conference in 1922. She also, I like this, during her trip to England in 1914, she was influenced by liberation theories of Havelock Ellis, under who she was inspired to make sexual intercourse not just safer, but more pleasurable for women. So, okay. Yes.
Yes.
She was arrested at least 8 times for expressing her views during this era. She then, in 1915, learned about diaphragms from the Dutch because, you know, the Dutch were like, here's how not to have too many babies. And they were like, thank you very much. And it was fine. It was fine. Not in America, though. So the problem was douching was really the most thing that was the information she was giving women was douching, yeah. Which we all know causes yeast infections and doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so what she did was she began importing them from Europe. Cute. I'll get back to that. But then in 1916, October 16th, she opened a family planning and birth control clinic at 46 Amboy Street in the Brownsville neighborhood of Brooklyn, which was the first of its kind in the United States. So now let's talk about eugenics, because we've been thinking it the whole time. Oh,
damn it. I knew that was coming.
You knew it was coming. Now, here's the thing about her and eugenics. There's a lot. I'm not defending her, but I am understanding her. So why? Because it was such a common thought in the day. It was what everybody kind of agreed to. Do you know what I mean? And by everybody, I mean white people. By white people, I mean the people in power, right? So for her, from what I'm gathering and from my research, and listen, I know it's controversial. I know people are going to come at me, and that's fine. Let's talk about it. But like Brownsville, for example, was a 99% Jewish neighborhood. It's basically like the new Lower East Side. The history is interesting because it was kind of like, oh, there's more space. The Jews can like leave the Lower East Side and come out to Brooklyn and Brownsville. And then it was like way overpopulated and women had no control. And so she opened it there because there was a need.
Okay.
So it's complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like her heart was in the right place, but she said some bad things.
Like, she's just a white lady in 1916.
Like, I think she's trying to overcome her whiteness, ladiness. But, you know, she also, you know, thought of birth control as a fundamental women's rights issue. In 1914, she writes, enforced motherhood is the most complete denial of a woman's right to life and liberty. But then she also wrote in a 1921 article, the most urgent problem today is how to limit and discourage the over-fertility of the mentally and physically defective. That's problematic.
Yeah. And I think you should lay out in plain English what eugenics was for people.
So eugenics was a very popular ideology at this time that would clean up the human race. That was basically what it was. Let's clean it up of all its flaws and imperfections, which means let's make it whiter than white. The argument for it was like, let's eradicate diseases, let's eradicate mental health problems. But the way it was bad, it's very bad because it was racist. It was classist. It was racist. It was awful. Because
it said that whiteness and straightness was the standard.
Is the standard. And there was her, which
is crazy because whiteness is a construct. Race is a construct.
It's
right?
All a construct. Yeah. So her justification for it. And it's been said that she wasn't inherently racist. Like she really wasn't. But based on what I've been reading, she wasn't anti-racist. She had a narrow-minded one-path goal, and she was going to get there.
Okay, you just described 99.9% of white ladies in the 1916s. I'm just in the United States. I can
in the United States. Yeah. And I'm torn because without all that she did, we wouldn't have birth control.
Yeah.
Like she really kind of single-handedly got us to a place, you know, she helped, you know, I'll get there, but like, it's weird. It's a weird place to feel because
no, it's just that other people benefited from her endeavors, right? Because she wasn't thinking of Black women or Asian women, or she was thinking of white women, but Black women are like, I don't want to have babies either. I don't want.
No. But that's the thing with Margaret Singer. First, she went to a Jewish place, and then she went to, I'm going to go to this. So she, She in the 1920s, she wrote a lot of books. It had a nationwide impact in promoting the cause of birth control. So she worked with African-American leaders and professionals. They came to her. And in 1929, James H. Hubert, a Black social worker and the leader of New York's Urban League, asked her to open a clinic in Harlem. So she did. She secured funding. And she opened the clinic and she staffed it with Black doctors in 1930. The clinic was directed by a 15-member advisory board consisting of Black doctors, nurses, clergy, journalists, and social workers. It was publicized in the African American press as well as in Black churches, and it received the approval of W.E.B. Du Bois, who we know co-founded the NAACP. She earned praise from Coretta and Martin Luther King Jr. She's complex. I don't think it's...
Well, what it is that because for the people don't know, the flip side of eugenics was like race purity. So birth control would fall in line with that because we can control how many Black babies are born. So like the races would be like, yeah, we can control all the Negroes, but in the... like Black people in this country always do, it's like, oh, but there's a benefit to us because Black mothers don't want to be forced to have children that they and their partners aren't planning for either. Like it's
right.
So yeah, that's America in a nutshell. Like it may have like racist origins or behind the scenes, but you can take advantage of something that's also in the execution of it is beneficial.
I will like, I don't know. I'm kind of erring on an argument that she wasn't, that because we found out later that she was fully in the eugenics land, we've been like, oh, she's virulently racist. And I think she lives in the in-between. I don't know that she was virulently racist, but I do know that she spoke at the women of the KKK, and like openly was like, yeah, I'm going to talk to them. That's fine. Now, and she justified it by saying we all need birth control. She also, right. So it's again, I keep fighting for her. And then I tell you that she talked to the KKK. I know.
Yeah, I mean, because, oh, you're so sweet. It's just like, this is what I'm saying. This is why, Black people are the most nuanced voters in this country. It's like, we don't have to be in love with the candidate and they say everything right to support them.
I'm still voting for her, even though, but I want to say.
Because it's like, she also will open up a clinic in Harlem that helps a lot of Black women. And she went and talked to the KKK. Okay, what? Behind closed doors, we're like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
But that doesn't mean we're going to turn down her clinic.
And I give her extra credit for understanding that they need to staff it with Black doctors, with people these women will trust. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's important. In fact, okay. And she like, it was written that in March 17th, 2010, there was, it was archived from a book, or I don't know if it's a pamphlet or a book, The Truth About Margaret Singer from Planned Parenthood, that she did not tolerate bigotry among her staff, nor would she tolerate any refusal to work within interracial projects. She was also a part of something called the Negro Project with two very white, rich people, very white, very rich, you know what I'm saying, which she encouraged the importance of sharing information in Black communities throughout the city, so not just Harlem, but throughout. And she advised the people who were funding it to hire Black physicians and staff to develop relationships with Black ministers because they could urge their flock to trust the work and to have more support. And she says this, and this is what got her in trouble. Quote, We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. End quote. So people read that and went, oh, so you do want to exterminate, which was
no,
like,
but it, what it says is that she knows that some of her colleagues in yes. the eugenics movement, that was their intention. Yes. And that's what yes. I'm saying. Like, Black people are nuanced enough to know that, like, yeah, this eugenic shit is some bullshit. But if she gonna open up a clinic, okay, yes, please.
Right. Like, and that's the, it's just a very white lady moment. I don't know.
Yes, yes, yes.
fun fact, those white people just funneled the money to pre-existing clinics with white doctors and ignored what she said.
Oh, so of course.
That's unsurprising. She formed in 1929 the National Committee on Federal Legislation for Birth Control in order to lobby for legislation to overturn restrictions on contraception. The effort failed to achieve success, so she orders a diaphragm from Japan in 1932 to provoke a battle in the courts. This time, she did not run away. It was confiscated by the United States government. Her legal challenge led to a 1936 court decision, which overturned an important provision of the Comstock laws, which prohibited physicians from obtaining contraceptives. This court victory motivated the American Medical Association in 1937 to adopt contraception as a normal medical service and a key component of medical school curriculums. Ooh. So that, like, she single-handedly made birth control a conversation you could have with your doctor if you were, like, married. You know.
Yeah, but it's so interesting. Like you said, she ordered one thing from Japan.
One diaphragm from Japan. And she had gone to China and Japan and worked with their like leading feminists there too. I'm not going to, like, I could talk about Margaret Sanger and her several lives for days. She's done a lot.
Also, you know what birth control does too, eventually it allows for a woman to enjoy sex, to have yes. sex for enjoyment and not just to procreate.
She talks about that and she talks about the importance of that. She also is, and I won't go into too much detail or this podcast will never end, but she was friends with Havelock Ellis, who wrote kind of the first analysis of homosexuality, not in terms of bad or good, but in terms of fact. And she supports that and says, we don't need to demonize it, or it's just part of human nature. Human sexuality. And in her theory, though, because it is still problematic, it's okay. They won't procreate because they can't. So we're still like, yes, but also no. You know.
Well, I'm glad she was fixated on birth control as a thing, because yeah. that got us birth control. So.
You know what?
Yeah.
And so in her late 50s, 1936, she's in her late 50s, and she moves to Tucson, Arizona, thinking kind of she did it. She's good. But then she remained active in the movement through the 1950s. She helped found the International Committee on Planned Parenthood in 1948, which evolved into the International Planned Parenthood Federation in 1952, which became soon the world's largest non-governmental international women's health, family planning, and birth control organization. She was the organization's first president and served in that role until she was 80 years old. In the early 1950s, she encouraged philanthropist Catherine McCormick to provide funding for biologist Gregory Pincus to develop the birth control pill.
Yeah. Burr, 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 burr.
There's so much more, you guys, but which you can Google. But I wanted to talk about her. I feel like it's a very prevalent conversation we should be having this time. And I also think that it's complicated, and it's okay to like someone complicated
yeah.
if they do ultimately the right thing you don't have to be friends with them and you don't have to agree with everything they do. And you can fight them on things you don't agree with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that she used her white ladiness to push forward the idea of birth control.
Yeah.
So I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I love Planned Parenthood.
Me too.
Donate to them if you guys can. They do great work. And yeah, because and also especially to poor women, like poor women just being burdened with baby after baby after baby after baby. And it's like, we can barely feed the mouths that we got. Like,
and the reason they want to put it down is to control the population.
Yeah.
And the government was generally okay with them living in poverty and suffering for their whole lives.
Yeah.
And that's the reality and why they fight against it.
Yeah.
Is population control, not in terms of how many babies we have, but in terms of controlling humans.
Yeah.
You know, white men are assholes. What? Listen.
You said, listen, I did not say that. Right, Miriam, people. Right, the white lady. Okay.
You can't. Even my white cisgendered husband would probably be like, I mean, yeah.
You know, it's so funny. I saw this thing on Twitter. Sometimes you do find funny stuff on there. And somebody was like, name something that's not in the Bible. White people.
It's so true. Oh my God. Not one, honestly.
Yep.
All right. So that's Margaret Sanger.
Margaret Sanger.
She died of congestive heart failure in 1966 in Tucson, Arizona, aged 86, about a year after the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark decision in Griswold versus Connecticut, which legalized birth control in the United States.
Wow. Yo,
it's not been legal for very long, you guys. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why you guys got to get out and vote. Yep. And also let this, I mean, I agree with you. Like I wasn't, you know, just be clear. What I'm saying to you is that, and that's why I was teasing you, like, it's not about making excuses for the eugenics and all that other stuff of Margaret Sanger. But what I'm basically saying is that, like you said, people don't have to be perfect for you to want to support the thing that you want to support that they do.
There you go. That's my point. Like, this Jewish girl cannot support eugenics in any way.
No.
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 You know, and it's interesting. I find it very fascinating, honestly, because eugenics is such a horrible concept.
It's the same thing with phrenology and like the, you know, the
which
your intelligence
also,
is based on.
She was into that for a minute too. You know.
But it's one of those things that people have to understand is like what we're saying. Because if she were around today, people would be like, oh, we have to cancel her and da, da, da. And it's like,
right.
But I'm saying to you, and this is why people were like, black people or sheeple in the Democratic Party. It's like, listen.
No.
Again, we ain't saying that the Democratic Party don't have the issues.
They
but
do.
But you know, one party wants to take us back to 1860.
Right.
And the other party's
they
like,
literally just did that.
Yeah.
I mean.
And the other party, you can't even have a conversation with them because they won't even admit that slavery was bad.
maybe don't vote for the party that thinks slavery was kind of okay. Maybe don't vote for that party. That doesn't seem hard. I don't know why that's so hard.
No, but people are like, well, they haven't done this and they haven't done. It's like the party does not have to be perfect for me to vote. The candidate doesn't have to be perfect for me to vote for the candidate.
Most
that I'm
Democrats
gonna vote for.
That I know are pissed off at the Democratic Party.
Oh yeah.
I get pissed
off
at the Democratic Party.
Oh yeah.
But I'm gonna vote straight blue.
Yeah.
I'm gonna vote straight blue.
Cause like I said before.
Yeah.
Pennywise, the clown from It.
Yeah, better.
Can come up out of the sewer. And run against Donald Trump. I'm still voting for Pennywise in this scenario because it's the better choice.
It's the better choice.
Because Pennywise only come around every 27 years and eat one child. Okay,
it's just
listen.
One. It's,
we,
you know.
Maybe we can sacrifice a couple kids every 27 years.
I love children, but like compared to, you know.
Don't write it. I'm only joking. But you
she's
get
kidding.
It's the spirit of what I'm saying is true. So, because as a black person, not voting is not an option for me.
Absolutely not an option. As
point blank, period. And those of us who know any kind of basic American history believe that to be true. So,
because it is true.
Yeah. It's so just don't facts. Come with your thing about the sheeple and that. It's like, come to me when you know basic American history and know that the Civil War was about states' rights to own slaves. Okay.
I failed that question in high school and I'm still mad.
Did you?
I did.
You
I
Nikki
did.
Haley that? No.
Because the answer was states' rights, not slavery. And I was like, but bitch, it's slavery. They're like, slavery. No, it's states' rights. And I was like, no. You're racist. I didn't get that far, but I could have. If anyone knew me in high school, they'd be like, yeah, she probably would have said that.
It's like the South be like, I want my slaves. Yeah, and I can say that because I'm Southern, so I can make up terrible Southern accent.
I can't.
That sounds like a racist plantation owner. I say, you know. On that note. That wraps it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Guys, remember to follow us on all the things. Also, remember to give us a 5-star review on Apple.
Yes.
On the Apple platform. It helps people find us. It gets us to go up to the top of algorithms and those things.
Yes.
And also copy the link of the podcast and send it to your friend. Copy the link and send it to your friend. After you tell them about it, of course. Don't just send it unsolicited,
yeah, that's
like a
weird
dick pic or
yeah
something. Like, don't think of, you know. And if you also want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon and give us some moolah, some cash, some dinero, yes, some okane in Japanese.
Okay.
And I'm trying to show off because
I know you're just...
I'm having a hard time this week, so I need love. I need superficial love that I can get
Lovetta,
from the internet.
It's okay. You're prettier and smarter than me. You got this, girl.
No, I'm genuine. Anyway, so if you want to support us, send me some money so I can go and get beautified.
Send Lovetta money. I'll give it to her. It's fine.
Send it
she
to
deserves
us.
It. Let me tell you, she deserves it. I'll tell you that right now.
I need to be beautified. Send it to patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And that's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
They can go on all the things. Okay, social media. So Instagram. Instagram's my personal favorite. But also TikTok and YouTube, where you can listen to episodes, is Notorious Women Podcast. It's all of them, Notorious Women Podcast. Follow us, like us, talk to us. You can DM us at Instagram. You can also email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And let us know. Give us, we've been getting some really good ideas that we're, you know, we're prepping and making lists, and we really, really appreciate ideas and thoughts.
Yeah.
So keep sending those. We love them.
Yes, you guys are awesome.
Yes,
awesome,
you are.
Awesome, awesome. So, and also we want to start a new thing where if you want a shout out, DM us and write in shout out.
Oh yeah.
And the name that you want us to use, and we will do that. Right? And we will give you a shout out. So
we got
do
you.
That. But put the name, because some of these handles don't match up. But do that and we will give you guys
yeah,
a shout
that's
out.
True.
All right, guys, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.